What it do, baby? Yes, sir. It's the Zoo Yorker, and you know that means one thing and one thing only. I am your host, Big Zoo, a.k.a. Ed R. Zooming, coming to you here on April 28th, 2024. That's a Sunday edition of the Zoo Yorker for those of you keeping track out there. Appreciate y'all being here. And, you know, since you're here, hit that subscribe, hit that follow, you know, so that you can get the notifications every time that this podcast goes up instead of having to go and search for it or look on my Twitter page for it, which you can follow me and let me know what you think about what the hell I'm tweeting and what the heck I'm thinking at ZooBeard77 on the Twitter machine, on the X machine, on the Elon Musk mobile. Let me know how you guys are feeling. I'm there for you guys. Hit me up. I almost said it's a lazy Sunday, but I gotta be honest with you, this has to be the most packed Sunday, sports-wise, that I have seen probably this year, to be honest. I was gonna say since the Super Bowl, then I was like, nah. Then I was gonna say since the NFC Championship weekend, and then I'm like, nah. And then I'm looking back, and I'm like, honestly, since the last weekend of the NFL regular season, this is the most packed sports Sunday that there has been in a very, very, very long time. And boy, oh boy, I'm freaking hyped. I almost cursed there, but it's a Sunday, so I'm not gonna curse today. But I am freaking hyped, man. Ugh, you got Knicks at 1. You got Mets and Yankees in the afternoon. You got Rangers looking to close this series out in Washington in 4 games. Finish the sweep. That begins at 8 o'clock. It's going to be a heck of a day watching sports on the TV. So make sure you order yourself some pizzas early on. Get that done by 12 o'clock. Get your booty on the couch and make sure you got yourself a couple of nice little cold ones sitting next to you for the day. Because it's going to be a long one and it's going to be a fun one going all the way from 1 o'clock probably until about 11 or midnight. So I will be locked in. Hope you guys will be too. With that being said, we did just have an NFL draft, and one that I deemed the most important for Joe Douglas for his entire career. I mean, we're entering the 5th year of Joe Douglas here. We still don't have a winning season for the Jets in that time frame. We still don't have a playoff appearance for the Jets in that time frame. And yet we have now seen him go out and get Aaron Rodgers. We have seen him draft in the top 10 now a bevy of times. And we have a lot of information on Joe Douglas, and a lot of it is really, really good. But this draft, in particular, is going to be the one that we remember, because it's going to be the one that has the most effect on whether he stays or whether he goes after this season. And I gotta tell you, Joe Douglas hit a home run in this draft. He could have went so many different ways with that number one pick, I almost said number one pick overall, but that number one pick for the Jets. He decided to go in the proper direction, and one that some fans are not very happy with, because you had the opportunity to get a flashy player like Brock Bowers there, but the reality is Olufoshanu from Penn State is going to be a left tackle for this franchise for potentially the next 10 to 15 years. So, once you have that information, and you realize, hey, Tyron Smith hasn't played a full season in over 6 years, you look at Morgan Moses, who was just given away for nothing from the Baltimore Ravens, a team that just went to the AFC Championship game. He's an older guy. You look at a guy like Simpson, he might be a guy that could get beat out at the guard spot. Vera Tucker has an injury history. It's just there's so many guys on this line that have question marks next to their names that you had to draft an offensive lineman early on. And since you didn't have a second round pick, it had to be done in the first round. And hats off to Joe Douglas. That was the perfect way to start off this draft. And even better, you traded back one spot and were able to recoup a 4th and a 5th rounder and only had to give up an additional 6th. That is called playing the game of chess in the NFL. I mean, think about it. He really got the Vikings to jump up one spot for a 4th and 5th. That means what? He was getting nothing from anybody else to move that one spot? That shows you how good of a GM this guy is. He was able to turn a pick where, hey, listen, could we draft Fashanu at 10? Absolutely. Could we get a fourth and a fifth back as well and still get him at 11? Yeah, let's do it. Say less. I'm in. That's one of those moves that makes Joe Douglas the type of GM that he is. And now he went on to get Malachi Corley in the third round, a guy that clearly they pinpointed as a target in this draft. And after looking at some of his highlights, after seeing just what he does on the field, this young man is exactly what the Jets needed. Now, I know Brian Thomas would have been a perfect fit in terms of being just a speedy vertical threat, but this young man, Malachi Corley, what he is able to do once you get the ball in his hands is scary. And now, he did play at Western Kentucky, so you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but this kid is potentially going to be the type of playmaker that sets this offense on fire, that allows Garrett Wilson to get free a lot more, that allows a guy like Mike Williams to become just, I mean, I don't want to say wide open a lot, but he's going to be in single coverage so often that you're going to see Mike Williams be able to get himself open a lot versus defensive backs in this league when he has Garrett Wilson on one side and a potential Malachi Corley and Breece Hall and Tyler Conklin. I mean, see, now this is why you needed to get a wide receiver as well. And a great job by Joe Douglas to make sure he did not leave this draft empty-handed. He did whatever he could to get to that number one pick in the third round. He tried to get it in the second round to get Corley, but he was unable to. So he got that first pick in the third round and got his guy. That is Joe Douglas. The man knows how to trade. The man knows how to get what he wants. And here's a trade that's very questionable to me. I understand why it's done. It's the business of the NFL. It's the business of football with the cap and everything. But trading John Franklin Myers for a sixth-round pick, it just seems like you didn't get the right value for him. And that's the one time, I think, that I've looked at Joe Douglas and I've said, I'm not quite sure why you didn't hold out, why you didn't ask for more, or why you didn't get more. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that move going forward, but Franklin Myers is a very good defensive end. Now, he's not the type of defensive end that I don't want to say a casual football fan, but a fan of football that doesn't look at the X's and O's really would understand how good he is, because he has great discipline. He is an incredible contained man on the edge. That is what makes John Franklin Myers great. Not his rushing the passer, not his, you know, tackles for losses, which he is very good at, but his ability to just force guys inside, to force plays, QBs to have to stay in the pocket. I mean, he is just, he's that dude when it comes down to the fundamentals of being a defensive lineman. And losing a guy like him definitely hurts the depth of a position group that was starting to look like it may turn into the best in all of football. Now, we sit here, and you see the Jets starting Jermaine Johnson on one side, and you got Hassan Reddick on the other with Will McDonald and Michael Clemens backing them both up. And now I like Michael Clemens, but Michael Clemens is not John Franklin Myers. So replacing him is not going to be as easy as I think maybe some in the building believe right now. And I'm not sure where they are exactly with the cap after this move, but they should be in a position where they can bring in a couple of guys after veteran cuts, after you start to see some guys become available now during the course of training camp, during the course of OTAs, all of that good stuff. So hopefully the Jets put themselves in a position to make a move like that. But this one just, it doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't really make proper sense to me. And it feels like they weaken themselves. And unless they were able to clear enough cap where they can go and still bring in another vet, if they just made it where, okay, now all the moves that they made this season, this offseason, work, I don't think that was the right move. I mean, I know you had to do it, but it just doesn't feel like the right move to me. And unfortunately, I think it's one of those moves that when you look back at this offseason, you're going to say, why the heck did they give him up for a sixth rounder? You just hope it doesn't come back to bite them in the ass when it's all said and done and you're looking at this team in the regular season. That's it. But still, a move that fundamentally Joe Douglas nailed. You have to get the team in right in striking position with cap. You have to get the team right with the cap. And then, you know what? The one move late in this draft that he made, fifth round, drafting Jordan Travis out of FSU quarterback. He had a nasty, nasty leg injury at the end of the season last year, but he is back. He is able to start to get things going. And I think Jordan Travis is a kid that when you looked at him during the year, he was a borderline first rounder, probably more of a second or third. And he has an opportunity now to be developed properly, which is all I ask of NFL teams with these quarterbacks, is to take guys in the rounds they're supposed to go in and develop them properly. So Jordan Travis, by unfortunate circumstances, actually might have ended up in the best situation for him. He now gets to sit and watch Aaron Rodgers. He gets to sit and work with Tyrod Taylor and learn football and learn NFL football and get healthy. Whereas if he was a first-round pick, if he was a second-round pick, you know in today's modern NFL, he would be forced to go in there, he would be on a bad team, and ultimately, he would fail. And that's what happens to most of these quarterbacks, and that's why it happens to most of these quarterbacks in the draft. Jordan Travis is a perfect pick, and his upside is through the through the ceiling, through the wall, till the sweat dropped down my what? No. We'll take it easy on that. It's a Sunday. But Jordan Travis is that kid, and I think he's going to be very surprising for a lot of Jet fans when you start to really see him come into his own, not this season, but next season. And ultimately, he might be a guy that we're sitting here in 2025, 2026, 2027, and we're talking about him being the next starter for the Jets after Aaron Rodgers is said and done with this franchise. I think that's the type of guy Jordan Travis is. And I think Joe Douglas just absolutely hit a home run with this draft. They are perfectly set up for this season. Anything that can go wrong, they can handle for the most part. Now, are there a few depth pieces, like really far down the depth chart type pieces they need to make? Sure. They could still go out and get some guys and solidify this roster. But for right now, home run by Joe Douglas. Hats off to him. Hats off to that Jets scouting team. And I just love Trader Joe. The guy kills it. Guy kills it every single time. Woof! Let's get it. I'm ready for football season, baby. About last night. Oof. I think that was better. It didn't sound good still, but it was better, I think. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe I'm just gassing myself up. I tend to do that sometimes. I'll just start gassing myself up. But you know what? If I don't do it, who is? But anyway, there was a lot that happened last night. I mean, where do we start? You know what? I think we got to go to the land of beer and cheese up there in Milwaukee, where the Yankees blew the doors off of the Milwaukee Brewers last night. I mean, this is what this offense is capable of doing, but their timely hitting is still atrocious. They blow out the Brewers 15-3. You see Rodon throw six innings, and I mean, listen, was he great? No, but he held them down to one run, and he put on a good start for the team that was blowing the doors off of Milwaukee. And you see Verdugo, three-run homer. You see Torres drives in a couple. You see Cabrera drives in a couple. Judge hits a bomb. Rizzo hits a bomb. Stanton hits a bomb. I mean, that's what you're looking for with this Yankee lineup, and that's where the potential is. The problem is when they go into these hot and cold streaks, much like I benign the Mets for earlier in the week, they go into these hot and cold streaks where they all show up for one game and then they all go silent in the next game. And their lack of timely hitting is absolutely atrocious. I mean, this team should be 2-0 in this series versus Milwaukee, looking to pull off a sweep on Sunday. But instead, they were unable to even get a man home from second base in the 11th inning two nights ago. And now, luckily, they were able to blow the doors off of the Brewers in games two, because we know damn well that if it came down to getting a big hit late, this Yankees team ain't going to get it done. So I think the biggest knock that anybody can actually have on this Yankees team right now is their lack of being able to get the big hit in the big spot. There is no timely hitting. There is no clutch factor on this team as of right now. And that's got to be, that is a scary thing. But I think we need to start reeling in how we're criticizing this team, and we need to understand what the actual criticism should be, because their criticism isn't that they're a bad offensive team. When we look at this team at the end of the year, they're going to be one of the better teams in all of baseball. Their problem is consistency. Their problem is clutch. They have neither of those things. That is why you have frustrations with the Yankees lineup, not because it's bad. It's a frustrating lineup to watch because of their lack of timely hitting. And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if you can fix that. Some guys are just born for the moment, and some guys are just born to be there. And unfortunately for the Yanks, and we can go back years now in looking at this team and this franchise to see that they lack that guy. And it really is shameful, because this team and this lineup is so damn good and so damn talented. The fact that they don't have enough guys in there that can just come through and that are just built with that X factor. They don't have enough dogs. Verdugo talked about this team being filled with dogs earlier in the season, and I get it. There's some guys that have a nice little bark on them, but the reality is there's no dogs on this team. There's nobody who's really going out there and doing the nitty-gritty things that you need to do to win, especially at the plate. And until that changes, until somebody finds that clutch gene in them, until this lineup decides they are going to score no matter what, because that's what they're built for, this Yankee team is going to remain in the purgatory that they've been in for the past couple of years. And I still believe in this team. I still believe they're the best team in the AL, more so by default at this point, looking at the American League, than anything else. But I still think this Yankee team will represent the American League in the World Series. But it's getting really, really hard to defend them and defend what this lineup is doing after seeing nights like tonight or last night where they were capable of putting up 15 runs with ease. It's... As my buddy Joe Beningo would say, the pain. The pain. And more pain, of course, ensued for me, especially as a Met fan, as the Cardinals ruined the debut of the City Connect jerseys, winning 7-4 over the Mets. I mean, listen, Pete Alonso goes yard, gets a 2-run homer. They had that nice little fifth inning where it looked like they were going to get back into it. But ultimately, they fall short with nothing coming after that. They lose 7-4. Like I said, Adrian Hauser, I just got to be honest, this guy is really brutal. His ERA is up to 8.37 now, and it's not like he's had two starts. He's basically had the whole month of April. Adrian Hauser is a problem for this Mets rotation. He's had, and I didn't think it was going to be that way, because I thought he was going to be a guy stable, you know, give you 3 runs over 5 innings pretty much every start. This is a guy that cannot control the zone at times. His pitches are not fooling anybody, and he's getting rocked. I can't deal with it anymore with him. And I get there's not much to do with this Mets starting rotation, especially with Senga not being available. But this man cannot be starting games for this Mets team too much longer. Because if he is, it's just going to be one day every single week or every single 5 days that you just know that if you don't score 10-plus runs, you're not going to win that game. If you're not getting into the double digits, you're not going to win that game. And that's ridiculous to have to go into games believing that. And knowing that. Actually, not even believing that. Knowing that. And now the Mets sit here after that nice winning streak they had last week. And we're talking about them coming off of a week where they are 1-5 over their last 6 games. And they're on the verge of being swept by the St. Louis Cardinals at home. And I get it, Paul Goldschmidt, Arenado, but this ain't the old Cardinals. this team is not very good. And if anything, they're on par with this Mets team. So to lose to them, you already lost the series. To lose the series to them is bad. It's a bad sign. But to get swept in this series, it just shows exactly what this team is. And it's exactly what I was fearing the other day. And I tried to give them credit for coming out and doing their thing. But they're proving to me that I was dead wrong. Because if they lose today and they're sitting there at 1-6 over the last seven, then we really got to talk about the consistency issues with this team. We really got to talk about who this team really is. Because if you're a team that wins 10 and loses 10 and wins 10 and loses 10, you're not a good team. You're just not. Objectively, there are problems there. There are big time problems there, actually. And this has been what the Mets have been for four seasons now, outside of that 2021 year where they won over 100 games. That's the only year where this Mets team had some semblance of consistency throughout the season in terms of winning. Now, you're just lucky to get a 5-game winning streak followed by 500 baseball for a week. I don't know what to say. I really don't. I was hoping for a little luck with the City Connect jerseys yesterday. I was hoping that would bring a good vibe. Unfortunately, those look like they're going to start to get labeled with some bad luck on them. Even though it ain't their fault that Adrian Hauser started that game for the Mets yesterday. I really am scared about the direction of this Mets team. And I know, again, that they ran off those games and they got themselves back to 500 and over 500 in that time frame. But it just feels like a matter of time before this team dips right back under 500 and they're sitting there with a ton of problems going into the trade deadline and going into a very important trade deadline with a man named Pete Alonso being in the last year of his contract. And it felt like we were safe. It felt like we were safe for a little while, but I'm just going to bring it up now. That Pete Alonso, he might be going somewhere this summer, and that's going to be a scary problem. That's going to be a scary problem, potentially. Oof, but we can't think about that now. Need to win today. Need to keep this thing going in the right direction. Stop it while it's still stoppable. Sort of like the Isles did yesterday. There's still time. There's still a series going on here, boys. Don't give up now. Do your thing. And that's what the Isles did yesterday, winning 3-2 in overtime on a Matt Barzell goal. Barzell gets 2 on the game, finally gets himself in the score column this postseason, and the Isles are able to save their season, if only for one game. It's still one game. But I think, you know what? If these kids come out and they play with a little urgency, you're going to start to see Carolina fold a little bit, because that's what Carolina does. When I keep talking about Carolina being fraudulent, it's because of what they've done in the past. And when the tough gets going, Carolina gets going. They go home. So this may seem like a ho-hum victory to you Isles fans right now, but in reality, this might be a kickstart for this series to all of a sudden come right back to UBS for a Game 6. So look out for that. Get your tickets now. For Game 6, I'll make a little guarantee. Why not? I think Isles win Game 5 in Carolina. Get it done, all right? And then get your tickets to Game 6 and make UBS loud as hell as the Isles look to push that series to 7 games after being down 3-0. Come on now, believe. I know most of y'all are Mets fans as well. You gotta believe, baby. Let's do it. I believe in the Islanders. Even though they haven't given you much of anything to believe in until yesterday, they gave yesterday. And I'm going to tell you right now, that Islander win makes tonight's game for the New York Rangers all that more important. Because if the Rangers win tonight, they can start resting as soon as tomorrow for the second round. And, of course, they will get the winner of Carolina and the Islanders. So the longer that series goes, the longer rest that the Rangers will be able to have. Now, some will argue, is that a benefit? Is that a detriment? I think this early in the playoffs, it's a benefit. Now, if you're talking about going from the conference finals into the Stanley Cup and you have a week off, I think that can kill everything that you have going momentum-wise. But when it's the first round, I think you are able to preserve some energy while other teams are pushing themselves to a different level that you didn't have to exert. So I think you could take advantage of that in the second round and even in the conference finals. But the Rangers need to take care of business tonight. That's the point. They need to get it done, and they need to sweep the Capitals because that's their goal for this first round. Milestone is just getting through. The goal is to sweep them and to assert your dominance. So far, they've asserted their dominance through three games. Here's game four. Finish off the job. Do not give them any lifelines. Do not let them have any hope of coming back in this series, because once you allow that, teams start to feel themselves a little bit, and they start to talk a little crazy. And listen, the Rangers don't need any of that, because their garden partners, the Knicks, who are going to be playing tonight, or this afternoon at 1 o'clock, versus the 76ers, I mean, they are hearing it from every angle from the Sixers team. I mean, they're really going after it. The Sixers are really trying to, like, I mean, they are legitimately trying to start something. Like, they want to legitimately start fights. Like, the stuff that those guys are saying about injuring a man. I mean, you got Kelly Oubre, who has no right to talk about anything like this. I mean, Kelly Oubre is a speck on the ass of the NBA. And that's just right now. That's not even in the history. In the history of the NBA, he ain't nothing. This guy thinks he has the right to go around saying that, oh, well, you know, we were complaining after game one, and now they're complaining and being crybabies after game two after we punched him in the face. No. No, you idiot. Nobody punched you in the face, you loser. You actually hurt a man. That's what you did. That's what your dirty-ass teammate did. And I'm not going to sit here and allow guys to act like this is a eye for an eye. You had two missed calls at the end of the game. I'm sorry that it cost you a game, but you don't go around injuring people because of that. That doesn't give you the right to go around grabbing people's legs and undercutting them while they're in the air. That doesn't give your star player the right to go kick people in the balls. That doesn't give your fat point guard, Kyle Lowry, the right to go around smacking people in the face. It's ridiculous, actually, the rhetoric that's coming out of Philadelphia, that they actually feel vindicated in this. They actually feel righteous in this. And now if the Knicks do anything at all, if they blow on Embiid, if they breathe on Embiid, if they try to block his shot, they're going to get called for fouls, and they're going to get called for every single thing, because this league has decided we have to protect our MVP, as if he's the only MVP that has ever existed in the history of the freaking league. And the reason that you have to protect this guy is because he's going around trying to hurt people. The league just suspended Russell Westbrook for game four versus the Mavericks. They have no problem taking out Russ, a former MVP, a real MVP, in my opinion. And that doesn't take away from Joel Embiid's skill, because I know we all have to compliment his skill. Anytime anybody says anything negative about Joel Embiid, everybody has to go, oh, well, he's really, really, really good, too. He's the greatest ever that's ever played anything in any sport. He's the greatest human being in the world. It's like, okay, enough. Like, can we stop it? Like, it really is, like, annoying that this guy gets away with whatever he wants to get away with. We have to call him a clean player. We have to refer to him as the greatest thing that's ever happened in the NBA. Enough. He's Joel Embiid. He's really good. That's it. He's dirty. He's a dirty player. It's what he does his entire career. Go back and watch all the highlights. Go back and look at his flagrant fouls as compared to Draymond Green, who has a way worse, way, way worse reputation than Joel Embiid. And why is that? Oh, because Draymond can't drain threes at the same rate. Oh, because Draymond's not 7 foot tall and 320 pounds, and he can't just barrel his way to the basket and get every foul call he wants. Now, this isn't about Draymond Green. This isn't really even about Joel Embiid's being a dirty player. This is about the Knicks and the Knicks going out there and handling business, because the only way that this series matters, the only way that this season matters, is if they get through this first round. If they do not get through this first round, this season is an abject failure. They can't allow that to happen. They can't allow this Sixers team to be the ones that take it away from them. They just cannot allow that to happen. So today is a must win. Game 4, 1 o'clock, Wells Fargo Center in Philly, must freaking win. And then when they win that, Game 5 at MSG, that place better be hell for anybody from Philadelphia to step foot into. I mean, I want them to sit around there, and I want the 50, 60, 70-year-old Philly fans that come, I want them to be like, oh no, this is what we used to be like. And not in the sense of beating people up or, you know, stealing people's stuff or bashing people's car windows in. I'm talking about just from the perspective of being loud, being vitriol-filled, and just letting it all out. Just letting it all out. That's what it's got to be in Game 5, and that's going to be a must-win, too. This is going to be an absolutely crazy day. I mean, crazy day. You got the Knicks kicking it off at 1. You got the Mets going at 1:40. Then you got the Yankees going a little bit after that in Milwaukee. Then you have the New York Rangers capping the day off at 8 o'clock with their Game 4 looking to sweep the Washington Capitals. All right, y'all, so make sure you are prepared for that day. Make sure to hit that subscribe, that follow, because tomorrow we'll be breaking it all down right here on the Zoo Yorker. Appreciate you all for being here. If you enjoyed the episode, leave a little 5-star rating. It helps get more eyes onto the podcast and makes me feel real good, too. And if you want to say something to me about anything that we talked about today, or if you would like to live tweet me during the game, you can do so always at ZooBeard77, that's ZOOBEARD 77, on the Twitter machine, on the Elon Musk machine, on the X machine. So hit me up there. I love to talk and hear what you are thinking during this Knicks Sixers game, during this Ranger game later, and what you think about the Jets NFL draft and the Giants draft too. But for now, I must bid you adieu. Peace!